My guest at this time is Dr. Paul Kengor. He is a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. He is also one of the leading scholars on the Cold War. He joins me now to discuss his extensive reaction to CNN declaring earlier this week that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. still speaks to today's issues. And the author of that piece, John Blake, highlighted three areas, one of which was that King was a socialist before it was cool. In response, Dr. Kengor wrote a column explaining how the mainstream narrative on King and socialism has changed radically over the years. We'll discuss that and the notion in general that socialism is cool. And Dr. Kengor, thanks so much for being with us.
No, sure, Greg, anytime.
So you were stunned to see this story, not only acknowledging King's socialist tendencies, but celebrating it. Why? How is that such a big change?
Well, that's right. And the author, Greg, John Blake, he said there was once upon a time in America, in American politics, when to call somebody a socialist was considered a slur. Well, you know, I would add there was once upon a time in America when if you called Martin Luther King Jr. a socialist, it was a racial slur, right? I mean, you weren't allowed to do that. And I'm old enough to remember. I mean, I'm 51 years old, so I'm old enough to remember in the 1980s when, you know, debate over an MLK holiday and, you know, conservatives being reluctant to commemorate somebody who, you know, conservatives reading what he had said thought, well, this guy seems like a socialist and maybe even pro-communist. And I remember that whole debate. I remember liberals at the time saying, well, he's not a socialist. Where are you, Joe McCarthy? How dare you say that? You're just a bigot, right? You know, you're just looking for a reason not to honor King. In fact, it's really true, as you know, for conservatives, they really detest nothing more than socialism and communism. So if you have someone who's a socialist or pro-communist, that's going to really bother conservatives. And by the way, I would add here for liberals, nothing bothers you guys more than if somebody's a racist, right? So it's like an immediate disqualifier from any commemoration if a person is a racist. So anyway, because of that, it was always considered, you know, you couldn't call King a socialist. But now here we have at CNN, John Blake, who's African-American, who's, I imagine, a liberal. And he's saying, yeah, King's a socialist. And, you know, socialist is cool. So basically now we've conservatives have been given the green light to, I guess, call King a socialist. Although I would say, no, you really don't, because if you do and you don't have, like, John King's piece of CNN in your hands, you're probably going to get called a racist if you call King a socialist. So if you're a conservative, you're better off just as usual sitting back and keeping your mouth shut and probably saying nothing at all.
Dr. Kengor, just a couple quick follow-ups here that perhaps will put a couple other things into greater clarity. Some folks on the right over the years have suggested that Dr. King would be a Republican or even a conservative today. Perhaps they meant more exclusively on cultural or moral issues. But when you look at the record, does the facts kind of let the air out of that balloon?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, Greg. I think when it comes to matters of culture, religious liberty, morality, certainly freedom of conscience. I mean, you know, if you read his Birmingham jail letter, he talks all about civil disobedience and how the law. I mean, he quotes Augustine and Aquinas, and he says that, you know, talks about laws that are unjust laws. Unjust laws violate the natural and the eternal law, God's law, biblical law, natural law. And, you know, that being the case, I can't imagine that he wouldn't be willing to defend pastors and religious people who want to cite conscientious objection, their freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, when it comes to begging not to be forced by the state to say, you know, make a cake for a ceremony that violates their sacred religious beliefs. I mean, that's very much, you know, exactly the type of natural biblical law, religious liberty argument that King was making, even if he couldn't possibly conceive of something like same-sex marriage. So, you know, in that sense, he might be more of a cultural religious conservative. Economically speaking, he'd probably be left of center. And let me circle back and even say here, Greg, I don't know to what extent we would call him a socialist, because I've seen other King statements that aren't very socialistic, but he would definitely, you know, he'd definitely be more of a mixed bag in terms of where we'd want to place him on which side of the aisle.
And so everybody's efforts to tie him to their favorite political issue every January is probably not fair to him in from either side. And finally, perhaps the question a lot of folks now have in their minds, given what we've talked about already, should some of the things we know he did say, whether it's about calling for universal health care and education, guaranteed annual income, nationalization of industries, redistribution of wealth, should those ideas cloud the things we celebrate him for?
No, they really shouldn't. And I mean, so we do celebrate him for his racial achievements. And I mean, that's really the key point. And, you know, everybody needs to understand that. But at the same time, I would make a plea here, you know, beg liberals to try to understand that. And we said this 30 years ago, that when conservatives have certain misgivings about King, you know, they're usually related to these issues of pro-socialism. And liberals ought to be able to understand that without falling into hysterics and, you know, knee-jerk emotional reaction of just, you know, foaming at the mouth and calling these conservatives racist and saying, oh, you just have a white hood in your closet. You know, no, you know, it's a legitimate concern. It's a legitimate gripe. You know, it's okay to add these negatives while you're hailing the positives. But short answer to your question, Greg, yeah, I mean, we celebrate him for his accomplishments in civil rights and issues of race, and most definitely not for issues of socialism and economic theory.
Quick follow up on Mr. Blake at CNN. You mentioned he's probably a liberal. Someone responded to his article with a tweet reply that said, I'm not sure Venezuela thinks socialism is cool right now. And his tweet reply is, quote, I'm not sure a lot of people would link what's happening in Venezuela to socialism. In fact, everything I've read and talking to people from there attributes their collapse to other problems. And he says, you know, you look at Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, those are really socialistic ideas, and they're the most popular things in the United States right now. So how would you respond to that response of his?
Well, Mr. Blake should pay a visit to the tomb of Hugo Chavez, and he can go there and say, you know, sir, what you called 21st century socialism, which is even listed at Wikipedia with your name next to it because you coined the phrase, it's not socialism, right? So Blake could provide the corrective here and explain to the ghost of Chavez and also to the live body of Nicolas Maduro as well that they're actually not doing socialism.
All right. Well, let's talk about the fact, because there is evidence in Blake's piece, and you mentioned in your column as well, that a lot of people actually do in this country, particularly young people, think socialism is cool. 2016 Harvard University poll said 51% of young Americans aged 18 to 29 oppose capitalism. And then in more vague terms, it says that another poll found that most American millennials preferred to live in a socialist country than a capitalist one. So, you know, 30 years ago, we had Democrats who were reluctant to even proclaim themselves as liberal. Now they're tripping all over each other to claim that they're really socialists. So what's going on? How did this happen?
Well, yeah, and there's a group out there called the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA. Check their website. And, you know, they claim to be the largest socialist organization in the United States. My friend John Rossomondo says that he believes upwards of 50 to 60 current members of the House, Democratic members of the House, might be members of the DSA. And so, yeah, I mean, look, it's absolutely true. I mean, in the year 2016, in the Democratic Party primary, and not the Socialist Party primary, the Democratic Party primary, a lifetime socialist named Bernie Sanders, self-avowed, proud socialist, member of, he was an elector to the Socialist Workers Party in 1980. He was a member of YPSL, which was the Trotskyist arm of the Socialist Youth League at University of Chicago in the 1960s. Joined a Stalinist kibbutz in Israel after he went to the University of Chicago. I mean, he got, what, I think 12 to 13 million votes, Greg, in the Democratic primary. And to give you a sense of perspective, Donald Trump got 14 million in the Republican primary, and that was a record for a Republican. So, you know, Sanders was not far behind Hillary, and a lot of Bernie people think that Sanders might have actually gotten more votes than Hillary if not for some shenanigans by Team Hillary. So, yeah, it is enjoying a popular resurgence. It's very sad, and that has to do with our colossal failure and education in this country. And people listening to me, if you're sending your kids to one of these colleges where the kid is coming out a socialist and you're paying the college to do it, shame on you. Shame on you.
Lastly, Dr. Kengern, you and I have talked about this a number of times, and I know you've also got a book out about the politically incorrect guide to communism. But when you look at the track record of socialism and communism, you've obviously got the mass graves, tens upon tens of millions of people murdered as a result of these communist regimes in China and the Soviet Union, millions in Cambodia, repression in every single one of them, from Castro all the way to North Korea, and even the trickling towards socialism ideas in Europe have not worked. Some people might think Scandinavia is perhaps a different story, but why does socialism and communism never get the denunciation that, say, fascism gets? When you look at the track record, it's nothing but horrors.
Well, again, it's miseducation, and there is a frightening poll, Greg, that was done by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, and this was in 2016. It was October 2016, and thankfully it wasn't a majority, but it was a troubling number. It was about one-third of millennials, one-third, actually believe that George W. Bush was responsible for more deaths than Joseph Stalin. And, you know, people listening, yeah, I that's what I just said. One-third of millennials believe George W. Bush killed more people than Joseph Stalin. Now, keep in mind, some people, including the late, great Alexander Yakovlev, Mikhail Gorbachev's chief reformer, estimated in the 1990s, going through Soviet archives, that Stalin, quote, may have annihilated 60 to 70 million people. So that's how colossally ignorant our people are. And that's millennials, one-third. Well, that same poll found about 28% of Americans generally of all ages, think that George W. Bush killed more people than Stalin. So they're being educated wrong. And I mean, they're learning all about the horrors of fascists and Hitler, and that's good. But they ought to learn, yeah, Hitler killed 6 to 10 million, which is incredible, awful, vicious. But that's nowhere near the number that Stalin killed. It's nowhere near the number that Mao killed. It's nowhere near a percentage of his population that Pol Pot killed in Cambodia in 4 years, and on and on and on. But they haven't learned any of this stuff. So this really is a complete failure of education. And again, if you're sending your kids to one of these colleges where they're not learning this, I blame you for a lot of this, listener, and for aiding and abetting this by sending your lifetime savings to these colleges for these kids to be indoctrinated in the way that they have been.
Dr. Kengor, it boggles the mind, to be sure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, anytime, Greg.
Dr. Paul Kengor teaches political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.